Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley. Happy June Sploitation. We are in the throes of the sleaziest, dirtiest, most entertaining month of the year. And I am joined for today is a Slashers Day, if you're following along. And so here to talk a classic slasher is the man who loves Junesploitation maybe more than anyone, Mr. Anthony King. Hey, Anthony.
Hello, Patrick. I do kind of pride myself on my of the greatest month of the year. I love it so much.
I appreciate how much you've talked it up and written about it every Friday. Notes on film at fthismovie.com. How's everything going at Cult Movies Podcast?
Cult Movies going well. We are halfway through the season right now, and it's the fifth season, which means it's we're wrapping up book number one out of three.
Oh my gosh.
Danny Perry's cult movies book. So we get a new list of movies coming up here sometime in the fall whenever the sixth season starts. So I'm excited to get into, we got stuff like Blue Velvet and Phantom of the Paradise and Taxi Driver, stuff like, some really, real cult classics coming up. But yeah, it's been fun. I am, I'm excited to, just keep going. I figured out the secret to podcasting, Patrick.
Please tell me
that I have to take breaks.
Oh, so, okay.
Having broken this into like seasons and doing like 20 to 22 episodes at a clip and then taking a little bit of time off keeps me from, sort of hating life and getting burned out. Because
advice 13 years ago?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like when I started podcasting 10 years ago at weekly shows and is like, ugh, I don't want to do this anymore. And then for some reason I kept doing it. But then this one, I was like, you know what? What if I take breaks?
And you have like a set amount of time that you take off, or is it just kind of like, when I feel like it, I'll come back to it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I always say when I feel like it, but it has been for the past five seasons, it's been 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like, I want to podcast some more.
Okay.
And so, we have, we will have done 100 movies. We got 100 more to do. And I, at the beginning, thinking of doing 200 episodes was daunting. But now having broken it down that way and looking that, wow, we're halfway through.
Right.
Also, doing a show that has like a finite number of episodes, there's mm-hmm. like an end to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I can do this. It's like it's like running a mile. If I were able to run a mile, I can't
right.
run a mile.
No,
I can't run a straight mile.
Please.
But it's like walking a mile. I can walk. Come down. That's nothing. I can do them. So, and then my God, who knows what's going to happen after that? Maybe I just hang it up and like never talk about movies ever again. And, like. I don't know what am I gonna do?
I'll bet you figure something out.
I bet I do too. Good. Yeah.
How is your Junesploitation going?
Just the best. It's been so fun. I've been able to. I'm such a meticulous planner that I've been able to sort of incorporate Blu-rays that I'm going to be reviewing later in the month as part of my Junesploitation. So it's
nice.
Sort of. Mixing work and play. It's all play, let's be honest here, but getting to mix in some of that so I don't have to feel like, okay, when am I gonna have to, I gotta squeeze this in,
right?
I try to participate every day. We always take a family vacation in June, so it, I do say now watching whatever even when I'm not watching.
Hey,
little behind the
hey
curtain
now.
Here. But I try to get at least, 30 movies watched.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And right now I'm at 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12.
Wow. Wow.
So I'm ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Wow. Nice job. We're only recording this on day four, everyone. Pull back the curtain a little further. What have you seen lately? What's good?
Well, let's see. I try to include my boys, and you know, a lot of exploitation films are not for the 5-year-olds or the 10-year-olds. But since it is summer break, we're home together during the day, and so for the first day, and some of the movies I will be writing about, so I'm not going to talk about those. But I showed my boys. I was waiting for the perfect time to show them The Goonies for the first time, and because I know they were going to love it, and so I was like, you know what, shoot, let's do it. Let's kids day one. For June exploitation, or teenagers.
Yeah, teenagers.
And so we watched The Goonies, and my boys loved it.
Oh, good.
Even my 5-year-old, who can only sit still for about 10, 11 minutes at a time, sat through like an hour and a half. It's a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, it's
almost
long.
2 hours long.
Yeah.
But he made it for about 90 minutes. So I was very proud of Rowan, but Eben was hooked the whole time.
Nice.
The cool thing with Eben is inadvertently the week before, I injured myself. So I was laid up for a couple of days. And so I was watching movies, and one day I watched Three Amigos. I was just watching like super comfort movies from my childhood. So I watched Three Amigos, Wayne's World, and the Blues Brothers. And each time he would come in and be like, "What you watching?" And then he'd like do the dad move where he'd get a little closer to the TV. And then eventually moved to the couch, and he ended up watching all these movies with me.
Nice.
And I was like, this is awesome. He loved them all. And I was like, okay, let's try The Goonies. Same thing. He dug it. I didn't grow up watching The Goonies. I think I saw The Goonies for the first time maybe when I was in high school. So I don't have like this uber nostalgic connection to it. It's still really good. I have a feeling probably watching it with my boys brought me a little more enjoyment than had I been watching it by, you know, just by myself.
Yeah, I could see that.
And that's not to say it's a bad movie at all. But you know, when I was in high school, I was loved watching the kids, of course, and you related to them, but I really appreciated, you know, Joey Pants and Ann Ramsey and Robert Davi this time around, and especially the, you know, the brothers. They're so freaking funny. Yeah, those two worked so well together. So anyways, the Goonies was a good time with my boys. Are you a fan of The Goonies?
I was obsessed with it when I was a kid. I have a little less patience for it now, and I can't get my kids into it, really. I've showed it to them like 2 or 3 times, and every time they're kind of like, eh. I wonder if I tried again now if it would hook them. Charlie's 14. He might have missed his Goonies window.
Yeah.
Did your boys have a favorite kid?
I think Eben really loved Data, because that's kind of how Eben's mind works in that way too. You know, he's like a STEM sort of kid, right?
Got it. Yeah.
And so I think he really appreciated a lot of the stuff that, you know, Data's little inventions. But they both loved Chunk.
And I was a Chunk kid when I was a kid. He was my favorite for sure.
And, you know, cause I was a fat kid growing up. And so like, I was like, wow, I was Chunk, cause I didn't see it till I was in high school, but I was like, wow, that was totally me. And of course, like the Truffle Shuffle, they're still going around the house doing that.
They go a little overboard with the fat jokes in that movie. Like the family bringing him a pizza on the beach. Like, come on, guys. I get we each need a little thing to identify the kids, like they're Ninja Turtles or something. But like, really, they're bringing him a pizza.
Right. Yeah. I had earlier this year went through the Lethal Weapon series and watched, and I had never seen 3 or 4. So having watched all 4, and then I watched a couple other Donner movies. I can't remember what they were, but like, you know, it's sort of the year of Richard Donner for me, and I really appreciate his love of the art of movies, the craft of making movies, because I feel like it, the ones that I had seen, especially the Lethal Weapon series, like it comes through, you know, like he creates, it seems like he creates this sort of fun family atmosphere on his sets. I could be way off base. Maybe he was a complete dictator. I don't know, but
no, I think you're right.
You know, he, for all intents and purposes, it sounded like he was a joy to work with. And I think that comes through, you know, getting these great performances from these kids in the Goonies. You know, that big age range too. Cause then, you know, you have young 20s are the high school kids. And then, you know, all the way down to, I think Sean Astin was like maybe 12 or 13.
Holy cow.
Make this. So you have like this 10-year age range.
Right.
And a director being able to sort of, it's like wrangling cats, right? And get these fun performances from these kids is pretty fun to watch. So it was fun revisit. I hadn't seen Goonies for years, nice. years. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What else?
Okay, for Polizziatesi Day on the 3rd, right? That was the 3rd we did it.
It was.
I watched a handful, and I'm going to write about a few of them. But okay, one that I wanted to talk about is a documentary. So I had watched a couple Lenzies, and then I watched Diodato's Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had time for one more during the day. So I watched, somebody brought, I completely forgot about this, but they brought to my attention the documentary Euro Crime, the Italian Cop and Gangster Films That Ruled the 70s.
Yeah.
From 2012, director Mike Malloy. And while aesthetically it's a little cringy, Mike Malloy is, you know, obviously a huge fan of this genre, you know, it kind of goes all out and like, you know, it kind of felt like a fanboy slash film school documentary where he was just so excited. And he's like playing with all these new toys and look at these like swipes that I do. And then look at these cool, like how I put the words up on the screen. Isn't it fun? All that aside, the amount of interviews he and who he gets to interview was mind blowing. So like Enzo Castellari and Franco Nero, Joe D'Alessandro, and you know, Antonio Sabato, who seemed kind of like a douchebag, honestly. Chris Mitchum, Henry Silva, Fred Williamson, Leonard Mann, and like just tons. Guys like the voiceover guys that did the dubs and the actor, like the writers, the film critics. I mean, the amount of people he got to interview for this was astounding. Now, being a list maker and someone who's obsessed with making lists on Letterboxd, and like when I get a film reference book, I'll read through it, and then immediately I have to compile all the movies that are in the film reference book into a Letterboxd list. That's like this movie. It's like right. That action, you know, the action, the 80s
yeah,
action.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah, for sure.
The book you're writing, right? And the darkness. In Search of Darkness. Those documentaries.
Yeah. Right.
So they're like film reference books, but in movie form, and the number of movies they discuss in this, it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes ish, is amazing for people who, one, love Italian crime films, two, love getting, like, just hearing as many titles thrown at them as possible. And man, I was eating this up. So luckily, of course, somebody had already compiled all the movies mentioned in the movie into a Letterboxd list. So I cloned that. I am now in possession of that, and I will be going through each of those movies because I'm a huge Polizia Tecce fan. And so I was super excited to be able to do that day this year. So well done to you.
Thank
Great.
You. Thank you.
Good
I was unsure about that day. And a lot of people yesterday were saying, like, I had no knowledge of this genre. I was not totally familiar with what this was. I've never seen one of these. But overall, I think it went pretty well. People seem to be pretty positive about the stuff they watched.
Absolutely. And like the sheer number of titles like showing up on Twitter, as like everybody watching all sorts of stuff. And I loved like all the Lindsay love. I saw people digging into their the Years of Lead box sets from Arrow, which are great. I highly recommend those. So it was really fun kind of going along with everybody, and hopefully it kind of sparks a stronger interest in that genre for people who hadn't explored it previously. Cause there's lots of interest, like some of the most dangerous shit you'll ever see on film. Like these Italians are, you know, talk about Roger Corman shooting in, right. You know, you have a week to shoot this. Well, Italians are doing that, but like for real in the city, stealing shots, car chases, like shooting guns, shit is wild as hell. So, check out the documentary. It's on Tubi. It's on Canopy. Euro Crime, the Italian cop movies, cop and gangster films that ruled the 70s, is really, really good. I love it. Are you a fan of it?
I am. Yeah. Like you said, it's like not a great documentary, like in terms of filmmaking craft, but it's great as kind of a reference, a great starting point. It can seem a little overwhelming, but I remember like years ago watching that documentary Yellow Fever, which is about giallo movies, and my head exploding and being like, well, now I need to see every single one of these movies. And Eurocrime is kind of the same way, where it's a great jumping off point where if there's clips or, you know, stuff, titles that sound great to you, you can track those movies down. Some of these movies are kind of hard to find.
Because
I was seeing titles come up yesterday that I was like, oh, what's that? I want to see that. Or as I'm reading about Thomas Milian, I'm like, oh, I want to see this movie that he made. Oh, you can't find that except on a German media book Blu-ray that I have to import for $50. And I'm not doing that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, or other sites that I don't have the time to, you know, sit for 16 hours while this thing downloads onto my computer. God knows what else attached to it. But some of this, especially because I have this huge list of 80s cop movies on Letterboxd from all over the world. And there's tons of Italian, of course, cop movies from the 80s.
Right.
But like where? Like on Letterboxd, there's like two people have logged in. It's like, how the hell do you find this stuff? And like the documentary says, a lot of this shit was completely lost. Like, was it that documentary where they're talking about, or it might have been a podcast I was listening to, but where producers would just take films that they were, you know, done with and just toss them, like literally burn them, or, you know, in Thailand, they would take dump truck fulls of reels of movies and just back them up into the ocean and literally dump them in the ocean. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, it's heartbreaking thinking about that. But, you know, we can always dream. Maybe someday we'll see, you know, we all have a white whale. So, and then, of course, Letterboxd is going down.
Oh no.
Oh my God. That was like, all right. Well, what did I, I watched, so we're talking about Maniac, and I watched, a William Lustig movie, Hit List, for Cars Day. And while it's not really a car movie,
okay,
I wanted to try to incorporate Lustig and Spinell into today. And so Hit List is 89, and that is, I think it's right after Relentless.
Yeah, that would be.
And then it's right before Maniac Cop 2. So, which is interesting because I really don't like Relentless. I
I
think
haven't
it's a
seen
real,
it since Cable in the early 90s.
I think it's a really bad movie.
Yeah.
But Maniac Cop 2
Yeah, rules.
rules
Yeah.
super hard.
Yeah.
And so I was a little, and Hit List, he's Bill Lustig, I don't know if it's his last movie. Maybe it was after, I think it was after Uncle Sam. I can't remember the name of it. He started directing this movie and then got booted off. And so he's got this uncredited movie on his filmography. But so Hit List was the last one of his that I wanted to see. Uncle Sam, I hate that movie. I cannot stand Uncle
Yeah,
Sam.
it bums me out that that's sort of his last movie, because it really doesn't feel like a Lustig movie in a lot of ways.
No.
It's missing the glory of his earlier work.
So I was a little nervous about Hit List. I'm happy to say though, this movie rules. There is a great car chase, so it did work out. I picked it because the poster is of looks like some sort of, and this is not the car, and it's not even, I don't think that's Lance Henriksen on the poster. It's obviously like an early sort of clip art sort of poster. But anyways, so it stars Jan Michael Vincent, and Leo Rossi and Lance Henriksen, Rip Taylor, Rip, not Rip Taylor, Rip
Rip
Torn,
Torn,
Rip
yeah.
Taylor.
Rip Taylor. You're on my head list. Throwing confetti up at the car that's coming at him.
We're gonna say Rip Taylor's in this movie. I like that better. And so Rip Torn is sort of like a mob head, and he is going to trial because of like heroin smuggling. And Leo Rossi is going to be the state's witness, and he's in like a safe house being guarded by Charles Napier and Jerry Burns.
Holy cow.
And Lance Henriksen is the hitman that Rip Torn calls and says, "I need you to go to this house and, knock off the witness so I can get off." And so Lance Henriksen goes, and right next door to the safe house is Jan Michael Vincent's house, where he lives with his pregnant wife and his young son. Well, Lance Henriksen goes to the wrong house because, a la The Burbs, a door cuts and one of the house numbers like
Oh, got it.
down, right? So
Yeah.
anyways, goes into the wrong house, knocks the wife out, doesn't kill her, and then kidnaps the son and then kills Jan Michael Vincent's best friend, played by Harold Sylvester. And so Jan Michael Vincent comes home, and it turns into this revenge thing. He needs to get his son back. And so he goes to the safe house and kidnaps Leo Rossi to get him to show him where these guys are. And so they end up becoming, sort of reluctant partners in the whole thing. And it's so weird. Like this movie is, how long is it? It's 1 hour 27. But I swear to God, it feels like there's just a few things that happen, and it's super weird. They really make things stretch in this movie. But we get thick Jan Michael Vincent, who is clearly
Oh,
nursing
he was okay.
hangovers. You
Yeah.
know, he's in the throes of his addiction here. Lance Henriksen is scary as shit here. He's, when he kills people, you believe he actually just killed this actor. Rip Torn, who to me, like, Rip Torn was always sort of this over the top comedy guy. But of course he's played plenty of serious characters, and he's a real fucking slime ball in Hit and Run. And then Charles Napier and Jerry Burns are sort of, bonus cherries on top. I like both those guys, but it's a good revenge story. Where the car thing comes into play, Jan Michael Vincent and Leo Rossi, and J. Michael Vincent's son are sort of chasing Lance Henriksen in his car through this parking garage. And they fight, they throw him over the edge of the building, and they think they kill him. So they start driving away. But then off the top of the building jumps Lance Henriksen, and like it becomes Jan Michael Vincent just like beating the shit out of Lance Henriksen with a car. And like, it's really brutal. Some of the stunts, you know, where this is, you know, kind of harkens back to the Eurocrime stuff, that documentary, like some of this shit, you're like, somebody had to have gotten seriously injured here. And then I'm not going to sort of spoil who dies or how these people die. Cause it's pretty brutal. You know, one of them like made my balls jump up into my throat. I was just like, holy shit. You know, one of those make your butt pucker type of things. But it's really good. Never made the jump from VHS. So it's on YouTube.
And okay, I was going to ask how you saw this, because I
literally
need
the
to
only
see
way.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a couple different rips on YouTube, and I will promote YouTube this way, because seriously, it. And I was like, okay, we need to find the DVD. Never even got to DVD, which is crazy.
Yeah, I can't believe even like Blue Underground didn't put it out.
Because that's Troma put out another one I watched. So it's weird that that Lustig hasn't even done anything with this, with even like Anchor Bay before with his DVDs. It's weird.
Yeah.
So anyways, check it out on YouTube. Highly recommend. If you're a Jan Michael Vincent fan, this is good Jan Michael Vincent.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm totally sold. This is a Lustig movie that was completely off my radar, and I pride myself on having seen most of his filmography because I'm a fan of him as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And this was, I didn't even know he made a movie called Hit List. So I need to check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe
it's good.
For Free Space Day.
The only other Lustigs I haven't seen are the two pornos he made.
I haven't seen
which
those.
Which he yet. Used to fund Maniac. Right. So
the
anyways.
Movie that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So that's what I watched. What about you?
The movie that he's the uncredited director on is called The Expert with Jeff Speakman.
Also on YouTube. I don't know if a disc of it anywhere, but I did find it on YouTube, and it's on my watch later list. So I do want to check that out.
I do too, now that I see that Jim Varney plays a character named Snake. So
yeah.
I'm 100% sold on The Expert, which came out in 1995, and that's tomorrow is 90s action day. So you better believe I'll be watching The Expert
snap.
For 90s action day. Holy shit. This couldn't come at a better time. My juiceploitation has been going okay. I've been trying to balance new watches with stuff that I have seen. So like, because in the past I've done all new watches and I kind of have a shitty month, but I don't want to only watch stuff I've seen, because juiceploitation, for me at least, is also about discovery.
Yep.
And trying to check out some new stuff. We kicked off Teenager's Day by seeing Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which I have to be an asshole in this situation. And it's not a bad movie. I didn't dislike the movie, but I feel myself pushing back against some of the hyperbole when I see people saying, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Oh, Lord.
That's great. You know, I'm genuinely happy for those people. I just, I think it's really ambitious. I think the animation is pretty incredible. It's very like inventive to watch. My heart sank when I found out it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes, because every movie is now 2 hours. And again, people love this movie, so bring it on, right? Like the more, the better. But I miss 85 minute movies, you know? It's great to look at. I think it's really well done. It's not a story that I connected with. It's a lot of like multiverse stuff. And maybe I'll like it better on second viewing, but I didn't really connect to it. I think I liked Into the Spider-Verse better because it had just a little bit cleaner of kind of a character arc. It was more just hero's journey, like I'm learning to become Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is for me what Batman is for you. Like I just love Spider-Man. And this to me wasn't why I love Spider-Man. Like the Spider-Man I love is like swinging around New York, punching out burglars, you know, or like fighting Dr. Octopus, not traveling across dimensions and meeting all these different alternate reality versions of Spider-Man. And none of that makes it a bad movie. It's just not why I go to Spider-Man movies, if that makes sense.
So what's the like real basic plot of this new Spider-Verse one?
I don't totally know how to describe it. Spider-Man, did you see Into the Spider-Verse?
Most of it. I had to give up on it. It's just not for me.
Yeah, I mean, Across the Spider-Verse goes even harder on the kind of multiverse stuff. And I don't want to like say too much about the plot because I think that would mean giving some things away.
Oh, okay.
There's some good character stuff. There's a lot more of Spider-Gwen, and I think Hailee Steinfeld does a really good job with that characterization. I really like that character. Obviously we get more Miles Morales. He's really cool. I won't even say who else is in the movie in case people don't know. I don't want to spoil any of the surprises, but I will say, and I hope this isn't a spoiler if you've read anything about the movie, you know, they've already announced the sequel, and it's the second movie I saw in a week in theaters that was half a movie.
Oh,
so
man, I
nobody in my group I saw with Erica and Charlie, and neither of them knew that like the sequel is already coming.
Okay.
So when it ended, they were kind of like, whoa, wait, what? Like it ends on a cliffhanger, you know?
Okay.
And as does Fast X, which I had just seen a week ago. And so obviously it's hard to judge it on those merits because it's not a complete story.
Yeah, that's you know, my little superhero V experiment.
Yeah.
Which I will, if anyone cares, I will be getting back to after June Exploitation. You know, Daniel Epler kept telling me, if you're going to do this, you got to go in with an open mind because we know you already hate superhero movies. And so the one thing I think I landed on is that since I love Batman so much and I enjoyed Iron Man, and I can't remember if I wrote about this or not, but the sort of magical superpower thing, the heroes with that stuff, it like really pulls me out. I like more of just the, you know, the badass dudes that kick ass
like
because they have lots
tech
of
and stuff.
And
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so, and I understand like Iron Man has that implant thing to keep him alive, but you know, I've tried to get into some of the other ones where they have like, you know, the radiation caused them to be able to do this or whatever. And I don't know. I'm just like, meh, no thanks. But if it's a rich white man, I'm like, yes, sign me up. I love movies about rich white men.
Love it. So again, I apologize to everyone for not liking the movie more, but I'm super thrilled that so many people are connecting
with
it, and it's a big hit, and that makes me happy because it's clearly a movie that is a labor of love for everyone involved. For as much as it's like a big summer blockbuster and a sequel to an IP and all of the things that I tend to be cynical about, it's very hard to be cynical about this movie, except for kind of maybe the cliffhanger style, you know, which goes back to like even Empire Strikes Back. So whatever, it's not, this is not the first movie to do it. In most other areas, it's very hard to be cynical about this movie because it's just clear how much everyone working on this movie really loves what they're doing, you know,
absolutely, yeah,
which is cool. The other movies I watched that day were Malibu High, which I think is a masterpiece.
Love it.
And Virgin High, which just got announced by a partner label for Vinegar Syndrome.
Okay.
It's, the writer director, they're putting out a pair of his movies.
Is this Richard Gabby Goodbye?
Yes. So they're putting out that and like, not Heaven Help Us, what's Hot Under the Collar.
Okay.
And so Richard Gabby or Gabby or I don't know, is kind of famous because he made Assault of the Party Nerds, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm looking at his IMDb to try to find Assault of the Party Nerds. Yeah. And I know him as like an actor from Nightmare Sisters and After Midnight. Virgin High, I'm just a sucker for, like, I think it came out technically in the 90s, 91. Sure. Everything about it feels like a 1988 USA up all night sex comedy. And I'm just a complete sucker for that kind of stuff. So I had way too much fun with it. There's a real shitty transfer currently streaming on Amazon Prime that's like open mat, so you see boom mics occasionally in the shot.
Hell yeah.
The version that's coming out from, I can't remember which partner label it is, but they, I think it's Culture Shock, are putting out a widescreen version of it, so I'm excited to check that out. I won't talk about my Monsters Day because that was a little bit of a bust. I did watch the one. Is it in? I see
in Mike's
grabbing.
Book, yeah.
I assuming Mike McPadden's book. Is it in?
Oh
it?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he compares. It's like he says it's Up All Night, the movie.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what it is, but like, sweet, in a good way. So there was one Umberto Lenzi, Thomas Milian collaboration that came out in that Violent Streets box set that I had never seen, and that's Freehand for a Tough Cop. I had seen all of the other movies through, like, picking them up piecemeal. 88 Films put out a couple. Code Red had put out Almost Human, which I know some people watched and were pretty knocked out by because that movie's awesome.
So, remember when you and I were talking about, was that sometime last year? I was like, I was talking about Lenzi. I was like, recommend me some Lenzi.
Yeah.
And you recommended, and I think Almost Human was the first one. I was like, what? Holy shit. Yeah.
So this one is actually co-written by Dardano Sacchetti, who wrote a lot of Fulci movies. So that got me very excited. And it stars Claudio Castellini as a cop who has to pair up with Thomas Milian. It's basically, even the Severin disc jacket describes it as like a proto 48 Hours. So they kind of bust Thomas Milian out of prison. He has a perm, and they bust him out of prison to help track down these other criminals.
Okay.
So the cop and the criminal have to team up to take down some even worse criminals. I won't say it's my favorite of the Thomas Milian Lenzi movies, because I think that still might be the tough ones, which isn't in the box because that's owned by Grindhouse Releasing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
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 But that's very much worth picking up if you are into these movies. Because that's Mauricio Merli too, who is very entertaining in these movies. Although the next movie I'm going to talk about is one of his movies and it sucked. but Freehand for a Tough Cop is pretty great. The Mauricio Merli movie that I watched is called Convoy Busters, which was put out by Cauldron Films.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I pressed my luck because I was like, all right, well, I saw one new good movie. Let me check out another one. And I was very excited about Polizia Teshide because I like you, I really like these movies. But yeah, Convoy Busters is boring and not great.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I was thinking about blind buying that disc, but
don't.
Maybe, okay. All right. I won't. I won't. Because I try to. I really like those guys, and I like what they're doing over at Cauldron.
Yeah.
But like Severin or like Vinegar Syndrome, a lot of this stuff is blind buys.
Exactly.
And anymore, I have a hard time. Like, I've been burned too many times, is
Yes.
what I'm saying, folks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to, if I haven't, it's, I'll find it online, I guess. If I love it, I'll buy it. I don't know.
Well, Vinegar Syndrome last weekend did their halfway to Black Friday sale.
Did you get anything?
I did order a couple things that won't be here in time, unfortunately, for like Cynthia Rothrock Day, but I did order like two Cynthia Rothrock movies and maybe something else. But then I had a second cart full, and this wasn't like I was going to place the order. I just was like grabbing stuff that I was like, oh, maybe this, that was kind of cheap. And then one by one, I went to just watch and typed in like the names of the movies. And I think four of the five were on Tubi. It's a wonderful feeling to delete stuff out of a cart and know that, like, I'm not going to buy this because I can just watch. I don't want to blind buy it. I'm just going to watch it on Tubi. And the fifth one, I just will have to live without seeing, which Erica always says, like, is the worst fate she can imagine for me because she's convinced I need to see every movie ever made. And I'm like, I swear, I don't have to see every movie ever made. I just want to see the movies I want to see. Like,
right.
There's a bunch of stuff I will never see, and I'm fine with that. But like the stuff I want to see, I really want to see. And Vinegar Syndrome has a talent for selling me on shit. Like they convince me that I need to see a movie that I didn't know existed 20 minutes ago. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, now I have to see this movie. And like you, I've been burned too many times that I really don't blind buy from them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's boy, it's a gamble. You like to support who you can't, and I won't even call Vinegar Syndrome one of the little guys anymore because they are
Right.
grown. But
Yeah.
You want to support the companies you like, but also it's my goddamn money, and
Right, right.
that's
And
it's
it's
that
not
simple.
cheap, like,
Oh,
especially now
gosh.
they're putting out like 4K stuff. And I'm like, hey, I would love to own From Beyond in 4K or even Showgirls in 4K, but like it's $45 and I already own Showgirls on Blu-ray and I'm just going to have to live with less K when I need to masturbate to Elizabeth Berkeley, like,
Oh, I masturbate to Kyle MacLachlan in that movie.
I was pretending with the Elizabeth Berkley comment. I was,
Whoa.
Yeah, they're in the scene together.
Yeah, that's, I haven't made the jump. And to be honest, I don't know if I ever will make the jump to 4K because, like, our TV can play 4K, but now that I have to go get a new player that can play 4K. And
Right.
I have my all region player and I have another Blu-ray player for the other room. And it's too much. I don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
And TBH, Patrick, I just like to have the movie.
Sure.
I mean, look, I have a stack of VHSs right here.
Yeah.
I have Gettysburg on VHS.
Thank goodness.
I own Gettysburg. I should get a disc of it, but I don't need a 4K of Gettysburg. I don't need a 4K of Spaced Invaders.
That's where you're wrong. I saw that movie on a double bill with Ernest Goes to Jail, and it was like on a school night, and it was for whatever reason, I wanted to see Spaced Invaders more than anything. And
yeah.
I don't remember it. Like, I saw it as a child and have never seen it since.
Yeah.
But I don't remember liking it.
I kind of got over the whole, I only bought into it briefly. Like, I need the best quality of every movie ever. And it's like, I'll be honest with myself. I don't need, I watch shit on YouTube, like very
Sure.
poor quality. I watched
Yeah.
Hit List, a VHS rip of Hit List on YouTube.
Right.
I was perfectly happy with it. So sorry for anyone who is, you know, gritting their teeth at me, but I just like to watch movies. That's it.
Well, I mean, like, so I'm glad that I sort of previewed Virgin High on Amazon Prime. Because I really liked it, and then I wanted to order the disc, you know, so I wasn't blind buying it. It was like, and I think Blu-ray is like the only way to own it, because some of these boutique labels, they're not also making DVDs or,
right.
you know, like,
right.
So I don't know. I'm really not upgrading stuff to 4K, like, as a rule. I talked about this a little bit last week with Mike. Yeah. I know I upgraded the Toby Hoopers and the Quentin Tarantinos, and like, that's kind of it. And then if something comes out that we don't own and it's on 4K, okay, great. But like, I'm not going to start upgrading everything that comes out in 4K, because it's just not different enough for me.
Sure.
It's not like the leap from VHS to Blu-ray, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Now, if they put Hit List out on Blu-ray, I will upgrade my YouTube,
your YouTube
copy of Hit List to Blu-ray.
And there is that part of me. I mean, we need to talk about Maniac, but like,
sorry.
No, it's fine. But there's that part of me that like really like Bill Lustig. I think I own most of his movies on Blu-ray that are available on Blu-ray.
Yep.
I don't own Uncle Sam, like, and I don't think I ever will. You know what I mean? Like, yep. So there's enough of me that's like, you don't have to own every Bill Lustig, because are you ever going to watch Uncle Sam again? No.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and bless his heart for doing all the work, he's the one that sort of started moving these B pictures into 4K first with Blue Underground. I remember he was one of the first starting to do that. That shit is so fucking expensive.
It sure is.
And like, as much as I love Maniac, I'm happy with my Blu-ray of Maniac.
Right.
I don't need the deluxe edition. As much as I would love to like hold the, you know, feel the heft of all that, I have the disc. I'm fine. It's fine.
They had just done 4K transfers to Blu-ray of a lot of their like flagship titles, like Maniac and the Fulci films. And I got those. I think most of them were sent to me. I don't think I bought any of them. And they look amazing, and I don't need to up. You know, there's part of me that's like, oh, but Fulci, he's one of your favorites. Shouldn't you upgrade to 4K? Like, no. Once you break the seal, then it's like, okay, now I have to get them all in 4K, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
So I'm happy with my Blu-rays of all my Fulci films.
Yeah, of course, of course. I think I would be. You know, I do have quite a bit of Lustig on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if I will buy Uncle Sam on Blu-ray just because I do not like that movie. But, you know, I'm with you. I like Lustig as a director. I don't think he's a great director. I love Bill Lustig the way I love Larry Fessenden. That these guys go out and just make their movies in however they can.
Yeah.
With whatever they can, you know, I had done a Neon Badges on Maniac Cop, and like, you know, Sam Raimi's in the movie, and Bill Lustig just, he was like, he was having lunch with Larry Cohen, and Larry's like, St. Patty's Day is coming up. We should probably do a parade thing. We can steal some shots. We need a news reporter. And Bill's like, let me call Sam real quick. I know he's going to be in visiting. And so he like, you know, it's just like,
right.
Let's get our friends together and just try to make something. And I think Maniac is a perfect example of that, of Joe Spinell and Bill Lustig doing that, just getting together and making this thing to see what happens.
It's I completely forgot until I've seen this movie maybe three times. We're talking about Maniac now, finally, those of you tuning in. No, I liked all this other stuff we talked about, but sometimes people get restless.
Sure.
So we're talking about Maniac because it is Slasher's Day. And I had forgotten that Joe Spinell wrote this movie. In my head, this was written and directed by Bill Lustig. And I can't think of a better vehicle Joe Spinell could have written for himself. Even though by all accounts, he was incredibly likable and charming, and had great people skills, this movie plays against most of that. He definitely has charm in his scenes with Carolyn Monroe, and they're a lot of fun together. But for the most part, he is this weird, isolated creep of a man, and he's so good in it. This is like a top 10 horror performance.
Oh, I would, for me, it's a top 5 horror performance. The movie is a top 10 horror movie for me.
Oh, nice.
My friend Bradley, you know, was saying, oh, it's a top 10 cult horror movie. And I forget the cult, like it's a top 10 horror movie. And this would be no surprise to anybody that reads my writing or listens to me. I consider this movie, a movie I've seen a dozen times, to be a comfort movie.
Interesting.
Not because it's I don't find it fun or funny. This is not a fun movie. It's a comfort movie because of Joe Spinell, because he's playing this absolute monster, right? This guy who we are supposed to detest. Yet because of the way he plays this character, we feel sympathy for him.
100%.
And it's not even pity. It's we sympathize, maybe even empathize with this character, even though he's doing some of the most horrific things imaginable. Now, does it help at all? I don't know if does it help. That might not even be the right phrase, but that he's not a he's not a rapist. Does that help our sympathy or empathy at all?
I don't know. I mean, I think as movie watchers, sometimes we do have weird bars where it's like I can distance myself from the murder, and the murder is graphic and horrible. He's literally scalping, you know, the bodies of women he murders and putting them on mannequins. As like, that's movie shit.
Right.
Even though it feels very real and immediate in this movie because of the way that Bill Lustig and Joe Spinell kind of put it together. But, you know, sexual violence crosses a different line. And for whatever reason, it's like, I'm not okay with the murder. I'm trying to like really answer your question, and and being honest with myself, I do feel like if there was, you know, sexual assault or sexual violence in this movie, it would be much harder to take and would make him somehow even more of a monster, which is like, we just watched I can't remember if I talked about this on last week's show or if it was after we stopped recording. Erica and I just watched a Sarah Silverman stand-up special, and she's talking about Hitler. She said, you know, Hitler for years molested his niece, so now he's really canceled. And it's like, it's the question of that threshold, right? Yep. It's like, right. Well, this I can accept, but that's too far.
Too much. Yep.
So yeah, in a weird way, I guess it does, you know, in air quotes, help us sympathize with him. Or for me, there is an element of pity. I know you said it's not necessarily pity. There is an element of pity for me, if I'm being honest. But the fact that he isn't, it just sounds so crazy to say it out loud. Like, he's murdering people
yeah.
horribly, But the fact that he doesn't also assault them is somehow lessens the impact as a movie watcher, you know?
Just say it, Patrick. Because he doesn't sexually assault them, he's a good person. Frank Zito is a good person. Well, here's the strange thing, too, is that shit going under fingernails, eyeball trauma.
Yeah. I know where this is going.
I can't remember what, like, shit with the toes. Like, there's a movie where, like, the webbing of the toes of some guy's feet are, like, cut. Oof. Somehow. Yeah, man, hopefully everybody's butts are, like, puckered up into their stomachs now.
I saw that movie. It was called The Birdcage.
and then scalping. I think scalping is such a is really icky. Okay.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they do a good job. They show the start of the scalping, like Bone Tomahawk sort of like gets at. He's like, oh, you want to see all the really bad shit? Like, we're gonna peel scalp. Like, we're gonna show the peeling of that type of stuff. Here they, you know. He knows exactly when to stop showing it, whether that's because they don't have the budget to do the effects properly or whatever. They know when to pull the camera away. Okay,
right.
We're going to show he starts to cut. All that, all those types of, all that type of violence on screen really affects me and makes me, you know, feel really gross inside. But here's the thing that makes me cringe the most in this movie, cringe in a like icky way,
yeah,
is when he takes the scalp and he puts it on the mannequin and he takes the thumbtack.
Mm-hmm.
He starts hammering the thumbtack through the scalp onto the wooden mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
And just the sound of him, just it's not even like big wax, it's just tap tap tap. That's the part where I'm like, oh my God. Like, that's what really, no pun intended, kind of, you know, drives the nail in the coffin for me. I'm like, Jesus, it's disgusting. It's really, really gross.
Are we too desensitized as viewers?
Well, yeah. I think people like you and I, people who watch lots of movies.
Yeah.
Sure. And I think like people like you and I, Patrick, like we're sensitive people. I think we're, you know, we're aware of our emotions. We're aware of other people's emotions and, you know, God, like, I don't want to see, you know, animal abuse.
Right.
You know, it's of course, everybody says, kill all the people you want. Don't you fucking touch a cat mm-hmm. or a dog. Right. But I mean, I have to be desensitized quite a bit if I call Maniac a comfort movie.
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of, you know, animal violence is something I don't like seeing. Sexual assault is something I don't like seeing in movies. Junesploitation is rough at times because it's like these are things that show up in a lot of these movies. And I love these exploitation movies, but they can be a tough sit at times. Yeah, I don't know. You know, the violence, because I was reading some of the reviews of the movie, you know, when it came out in 1980, and Gene Siskel famously like walked out after 20 minutes. He was not a big horror guy. I just find it fascinating that people in 1980 were repulsed and repelled by this movie. And in 2023, you and I can watch it and say, no, this is a masterpiece.
Yep.
And is it just, were they more sensitive in 1980 because they hadn't seen as much on-screen graphic on-screen violence as we have in the ensuing years? Were they unable to get past, you know, I feel like I was afraid to see this movie for a number of years just because it had such a reputation for being so visceral and violent. And
do you remember the first time you saw it? Or how old you were?
No. I mean, it was probably in the 2000s.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I watched it for the first time Because let me see, this was 2017. I logged it for the first time. That was the second time I saw it. So I probably watched it in 20, shit, 26, 20, maybe 2015 for the first time.
Yeah, it was.
So,
I'll bet it was on Blu-ray the first time I saw it, so it had to be post 2010, you know.
yeah, I watched it on Shudder for the first time.
Okay.
Because it's been on Shudder, I think, since the beginning.
It's their
And
flagship
so,
movie.
it
Every
was
other
the
movie
first.
comes and goes, but we'll always have Maniac in stock.
Was this the first Joe Bob when he came back, or it was? I know it was the late feature, but I don't know if it was the first week or the second week,
Oh
or maybe even the
gosh.
third week.
Yeah, I
But
don't remember.
when
It
the
wasn't part
drive-in
of that
first
original
started in there.
24-hour, yeah, but it might have been one of his first episodes back. Yeah.
So anyway, so I think, by the time I watched it, I had already heard about Maniac, and this is what to expect when watching Maniac. And while and I had probably seen clips of the Tom Savini head explosion, and while it was still ultra violent, I wasn't, blown away by any means. And so maybe by that point I was desensitized. I mean, I don't know. Like, for me, Maniac has always been about Joe Spinell's performance. And I think that's why I feel comfortable going back to it over and over and over. And yes, the violence is there. Yes, the violence is really icky at times, but it's all about Joe Spinell for me. And I don't know how it is for anybody else, or with you, Patrick, when you sort of read up on a movie or do a little, background check on a movie, how it came to be. For me, it makes me appreciate the movie even more, and how this movie came to be, just sort of elevated it even more in my head and in my heart. And I'm like, God, this movie, it's a miracle. This movie, it's a miracle any movie exists, but like this movie especially. And it's such a special thing that these two guys got together and made this gross movie. But it's sort of almost changed the trajectory of their careers. Like Spinell's career, like he was, projected to be like the king of horror going forward had he not died 9 years later. And like he found his thing. Like he was really comfortable in this genre, and so I think all of that compounds into making me love this movie even more. My wife would never be able to sit through this. So I think it has something to do with, people like you and I who've watched lots and lots and lots of horror movies. And where it doesn't, I mean, does it, did it affect you when you rewatched it yesterday?
I mean, not the violence per se, the actual on-screen bloodshed, although that Tom Savini head explosion has to be like, what are the top five head explosions? Like
Like
Scanners,
Scanners.
Dawn of the Dead,
Okay, yeah.
this one. What are the other two? I don't even know.
Right.
I might put Chopping Mall in there.
Okay.
I don't know what the
Yes.
fifth would be, but Savini did at least two of them.
Right. And see, like for me, this, I would put this above Scanners, and I know that's sacrilege for many people. Scanners is probably more well known. But this head explosion is so juicy. I mean, it's juicier than the Scanners one, because like it happens in such a confined space, and the
Well, and
way
then he
he
swings the camera around to the back.
ex right exactly, and then how he is sort of like a Thai action movie where they replay the stunt, right, in five different angles, slow motion this way, and Lustig does that with this, with the head explosion, and like you you have to sit through it like three or four times, one of them in slow motion. And it's, I mean, when I say juicy, it's like, I mean, it's like a watermelon.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those rubber band things where the watermelon explodes, but it's in this confined space. And so it really sort of just centralizes all the food, right?
And that's literally what they did. They took a head cast of Tom Savini, filled it with blood and old food, and hit it with a live shotgun round. Like, this is, as you said, you know, the, how the movie came to be. Like, this is literal run and gun approach.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, those are my favorite types of movies.
Yeah.
That's why Larry Fessenden is my favorite director. William Lustig would be, you know, up there, top 20, I think.
Yeah.
Just because of that approach, you know, he never had a ton of resources. And
right. Are you a Larry Cohen fan as well?
I am a Larry Cohen fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like Q.
Q is awesome.
The Winged Serpent.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of The Stuff, which I know is, I don't know why I don't love The Stuff, but, and I've only seen it the one time.
Yeah.
And it was a Joe Bob. It was a last drive-in thing. So, I don't, I felt its length, which probably has something to do with all the
interruptions. Yeah.
But yeah, I do like Larry Cohen.
He's another one of those, like, make the movie by any means necessary types, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, he and Lustig work together all the time. And,
right.
But here's what I discovered today. So everyone knows my love for Marjo Gortner, all time favorite actor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say otherwise tonight. I will say, though, Joe Spinell.
Yeah.
Is a very close second.
Oh, boy.
Officially.
Hot on the heels.
He is, man, he is so watchable.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, like, what the hell he's doing, whether it's, you know, in The Godfather, his first movie, by the way, wow. Hell of a first movie.
Yeah, right.
Or, like, I watched the last horror film today, another one with Carolyn Monroe.
Okay, I've never seen that one.
It's on Tubi under Fanatic. It's one of those, it's sort of like the obsessed fan.
Okay.
Sort of scenarios. But they shoot on location during the 1981 Cannes Film Festival. Talk about run and gun, stealing shots.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot of fun. And he's, you know, he's playing, it's like Maniac 2, basically. As Maniac 2, the, you know, the sort of,
right. Yeah, you sent
promo
me that.
Film
Thank
they
you.
They put together because they wanted to make it with Buddy
Giovinazzi or Combat
right.
Shock, whatever.
Combat Shock, yeah. Buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the plan for Maniac.
That's a hard movie to watch. Speaking of movies that I have a hard time getting through.
Really? I haven't seen Combat Shock.
It's tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it means I'll probably love it and end up be one that puts me to sleep at night.
Because again, it's tough in the way that Maniac is tough, where it's like, it's not just the violence that's on screen. It's that the movie itself is an act of, like, psychological violence against the viewer. And again, it's very effective. I don't like Combat Shock as much as I like Maniac. I think Maniac is a genuinely great film. And part of the reason it's great is because they didn't totally know what they were doing. Because it is so scuzzy and has that early, you know, late 70s New York atmosphere, because Bill Lustig is coming off of directing porn films. Had it been any slicker, any more polished, it wouldn't be the movie that it is, and it wouldn't be nearly as effective.
Right. And I think that, you know, something that I kind of relate to Maniac, and it's not the same movie by any means, but Deadbeat at Dawn by Jim Van Bever, where it's just like Van Bever, you know, wanted to be an action star.
Right.
Like, and he went out and made his thing, right? And, like, shot on location, all, you know, these sort of guerrilla filmmaking style or guerrilla style filmmaking. And, like, you can feel the, while the violence feels over the top in Deadbeat at Dawn, especially, and in Maniac, the violence to me feels over the top. the fact that they're shooting like on the streets of New York aids a great deal in the realism to the movie. And that's it's all about Spinell's performance, but them shooting in this time period of New York City, right? Like, we're talking about real dirty old New York. This
Right.
is when it starts hitting the real bad decline. It's nasty, and they're shooting on the streets. We're there at like Spinell's apartment, and you're like, oh God, this is so gross. Like, it's real shit, and you feel that, and that adds to the real, you know, it's like early Abel Ferrara movies or shit, late. I mean, any Abel Ferrara movie, really. They're able to capture sort of the essence of wherever they are. You know, Ferrara shooting in Italy now, but you still feel like we're there with them. And I think that aids a great deal in what we feel when we watch Maniac. It's not just the violence. It's not just Spinell's performance. It's not just, you know, the kind of sweet, innocent Carolyn Monroe getting stuck with this fucking wacko. It's that we're in the throes of like a really dilapidated Manhattan at the in this time. So, and this is, you know, my favorite time period of movies, the dirty old New York movies. Justin Law Liberty has a great list on Letterboxd, speaking of Letterboxd list, pre Giuliani, dirty old New York City. You know, it's before Giuliani came in, like White House, Times Square, 42nd Street, the Deuce, as they knew it in the 70s and the 80s, and then made it into this Disneyland that it is now. But anyways, great list of you know, tons of movies from that era.
Era.
And you're
See,
welcome.
you did it. You did it.
I tried to sidestep.
I know. I would never want to go to that New York. I love movies set in that New York. I never wish New York was still like that.
Oh man, see, that's the weird thing. Like, I find myself just Googling 1970s New York City, and I'm like, oh man, I wish I could be there. I want to know what it smells like. And like, even reading like oh shit, with Sleazoid Express, Bill Landis, his newsletter, his original Sleazoid newsletter, and then reading the book, he describes in detail what it was like back then. And I'm just like, yeah, I want to feel the sticky on my shoes and like the springs coming out of the chairs in the theaters poking my ass. And I've been to theaters like that anyways, but
But that's when the city was overrun by Chud.
we could have Chud as a pet. I think that would be great.
Chud can't be domesticated.
You could have, not Chud. What about oh fuck, what's from Basket Case? What's the brother?
Belial.
Belial. I would love to run
Speaking
into
of great
Belial.
sleazy, gross New York movies, Hennenlotter's another guy who's like the
Exactly.
patron saint of 42nd Street.
Yeah, like Basket Case is another one, like really captures the scuzz of 42nd Street. So have you seen David Gregory's documentary on Joe Spinell?
No.
So you know, from Severin Films.
Yeah.
And it, I think it's an early, maybe one of his first movies, from 2001. I think he made it. You can watch it on YouTube. It's less than an hour long, but it's called like The Life of Joe Spinell or something like that. But it's really good. You know, they interview Bill Lustig and not Joe Pesci, the brother, something Pesci.
Oh, I don't know.
Joe, what's Joe Pesci's brother's name?
Barney Pesci.
Barney Pesci is incorrect, Patrick. It is
Frank Pesci.
Frank Pesci. Yeah. Him and Joe grew up in New York together and they moved out to LA together. Anyways, it's a really good documentary and kind of shows the brief rise and fall of Joe Spinell and his career. But man, he made so many interesting movies in such a short period of time. He's in like 60 movies in, you know, 10 years, 12, 13 years. That's pretty incredible. And I think Maniac, for me, is his best.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, in terms of performance, in terms of really giving him a vehicle to show off what he could do, because obviously he does a lot of supporting roles in like higher profile movies. Did you ever see The Undertaker?
That's a close. I love The Undertaker.
It just, I've only seen it once, and I remember feeling like, oh, it's kind of Maniac too, you know, like.
See, that's a, you know, after Maniac, that was sort of the trajectory he went on. But man, he's really good in those roles.
I think he's always good, but I definitely need to revisit The Undertaker. That was an early Vinegar Syndrome blind buy for me because of Joe Spinell.
Yeah. I really like The Undertaker. And you know, I love the one Marjo movie I don't like, Star Crash.
How dare you? I love Star Crash.
I know everybody loves Star Crash but me. And I'm I'm Marjo's biggest fan in the world.
Well, Marjo is not the reason to love Star Crash.
Well, is it Joe Spinell dubbing his own voice?
it's I just love the handmade quality of the whole thing, you know, like
charming, right?
It is. It's charming. Yeah. It overstays its welcome, but I do love Star Crash.
Good old Lewis Coates. But yeah, you know, The Ninth Configuration is a great movie, a great Spinell performance. And then, you know, he's in Cruising for a minute. But anyways, it doesn't matter, even if he's playing the sleaziest characters, like in Cruising, him and Mike Starr are the pussy posse, is what Billy Friedkin called them. Or like in Night Shift, he plays sort of the manager of that sex club at the end that Michael Keaton's working at. He's kind of an asshole, and he's, you know, sort of this sleazy guy. But it doesn't matter what role he's in. You're just like, fuck yeah, Spinell.
Yeah.
And like, we get a whole movie, his first starring role, Maniac, of him playing a despicable character. Yet, I'm just like, I feel for this guy. I wouldn't do what he does.
Well, obviously. It's, you know, you get the feeling, but it's baked into the performance. It's in the screenplay. It's like, not that murder is ever justified, but as we watch the movie, we're watching someone kill because he has to. Like, this is the only way to exorcise his demons. And it doesn't excuse it. It doesn't make it okay. Obviously, I'm not endorsing being a serial killer, but like, you get the feeling that he's compelled to do this in a way that many movie killers, in particular like slashers, which this sort of falls into that camp, which is why we're talking about it today, but like they do it because they get joy out of it. They do it because they're evil and not tortured, and this is a character that's tortured.
I for some reason I kept thinking, and I haven't even seen the second one, but I was thinking of Terrifier, Art the Clown. Where,
right,
like,
exactly.
That's
right.
A character who's
just an asshole.
He just he's a fucking prick, and he just likes to torture people.
Right, right.
And Spinell, Frank Zito,
great director.
Has demons. I hate the Prowler, by the way.
Really?
I think I'm in the minority there too.
Interesting.
Weird.
No, yeah, I think that movie's pretty solid.
Yeah, most people do. Speaking of, is that Blue Underground, right? Bill Lester.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Frank Zito is dealing with. Oh, I was thinking. You could program a crazy man is crazy because mommy was a hoe, or he saw me. you know, right. having sex.
Right.
I kept thinking of Christmas Evil.
Yes.
Mommy was a hoe, just mommy and daddy were
right.
were being naughty on the carpet. But yeah, he's dealing with some really horrible shit. Stuff that I, like, thank God, and knock on wood, I have not experienced and do not experience. Like, I can't relate to him
right
really at all, yet I still empathize with him. And you know, the whole time I'm thinking, God, I wish somebody would just help him.
Right.
He needs help. He needs help. Somebody help him. And it's his performance. Elric always talks about it's in his eyes. Like, he's got this tremendous sadness.
Poetry in his eyes.
Poetry in his eyes.
Yeah.
And like, I think Warren Oates was the same way. Like, I, you know, Warren Oates in Tulane Blacktop has this tremendous sadness to his character, and it all lies in his eyes. Or even in the shooting, I think, you know, he's terrified and he's driven, but it's all lying in his eyes. And I think with Spinell, a lot of that comes, and Lustig, I think, captured that perfectly, especially on those close-ups, you know, the early one where he's choking the woman in bed. And it's that the probably most famous shot of the movie, the close-up of him.
His eyes are kind
sweat.
Of bugging out of his head. Yeah.
It's the moments where he acts normal, like when he goes on a date with Carolyn Monroe and he's wearing his glasses and he's dressed nicely. He's not in his nasty, grimy, you know, white shirt, undershirt. It's those moments where he's acting normal where I'm like, this is a really dangerous man. Yet when he's, you know, sort of crying out for help as he's doing these terrible things, that's when I'm like, oh, poor baby.
Yeah. Is there, you know, I made a joke on Twitter last night. It wasn't really a joke, but I was thinking about doubling this movie with Peeping Tom.
Oh, I was thinking that too.
Yeah. Well, because this is kind of what, that's one of the first kind of serial killer movies I can think of, or that are told very much from the perspective of the serial killer.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some other ones, because I think Maniac, no disrespect to Peeping Tom, for me, Maniac does it better than any other movie. Like, we are in this guy's head, and that's part of why you're able to sympathize with him, have pity for him, however you end up feeling about Frank Zito. Like, this movie does a great job of putting you in his head. But I was trying to think of some other, like, slasher movies that are told from the perspective of the slasher, and it's not, I don't think it's a super long list.
I real quick, I just speaking on Peeping Tom, a movie that I really love, I'm wondering, because even though Carl Boehm's character is, was it Mark, I think his character's name is Mark in Peeping Tom, is a real fucking monster.
Yeah.
I still, the way I write,
I
empathize with Mark. Like, he plays this very, like, God, Carl Boehm is so fucking good in Peeping Tom. Holy shit. I need to rewatch Peeping Tom. So I'm wondering, it's probably the performance, but is it maybe partly because we are in the perspective of the slasher? Another one I was thinking, and it's maybe not a slasher, but serial killer movie. Another movie I consider a comfort movie. I don't know why. But You Met the Director. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh, boy.
Talk about a tough movie.
Yeah.
Michael Rooker's character, a great performance.
Absolutely.
I'm like, obviously this guy is a horrific monster, but there's something that I don't think it's really empathy in this case. Maybe it's more pity, or sympathy. the character of Otis in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is more terrifying or at least grosser than Henry is. Because it seems like Henry has a sort of moral code, almost. And he's training, right? He's training Otis how to be, gross, this serial killer. But of course, there's plenty of sex crimes in that movie, which make it a little more hard to watch.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, perspective of the serial killer.
Yeah.
Psycho.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would include Psycho.
Okay. We love Norman Bates.
Right.
Right? And like right. Number two comes along and you're like, oh, we've really loved Norman Bates.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
I love Norman Bates in two even more than I do in one.
Oh, me. Oh, God. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great performance. Let's see what's the Christmas ones? The sequels, there's like five of them.
But Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, maybe.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Again, they saw a rape in this case.
Right.
That's what affected them.
Right.
Let's see. I guess Christmas Evil. Christmas Evil is another one that I have such, in this case, I think empathy for Brandon Maggart's character. And that's another performance, like a Joe Spinell, like a Warren Oates performance. Brandon Maggart is like, it's when he glues the beard for the first time on his face, and then he's tugging it and he's tugging harder and he starts to cry. And like me, it just affects me so much that I feel so bad for this guy. He's dealing with shit and he doesn't know how, or he's got all this shit in his head. He doesn't know how to deal with it.
Right. Right.
And again, I think a lot of it is the performance. Are you a fan of Christmas Evil?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. What else? I'm looking through. What about, I don't know. Sleepaway Camp.
Well, Sleepaway Camp is tricky because it's structured as a mystery. So it's not really told through the main character's perspective.
Okay.
It sort of is, but you kind of don't know it until you get to the end.
Sure.
What's fascinating to me is, you know, they remade Maniac, and I don't know how you feel about the remake of Maniac, but I'll ask you in a second. But it was almost as though somebody watched Maniac and said, wow, you know, this is a movie that's really told from the slasher's point of view. Wait a second. What if, how could we be even more point of view than Bill Lust? I know, let's do the whole thing first person. It's an ambitious choice. I know people love the Maniac remake. I know they love Elijah Wood's performance in it. I like Elijah Wood a lot. I think he gives a good performance. I think you can't help but compare him to Joe Spinell, and there's just no comparison. But that stylistic choice did not work for me at all as I watched the Maniac remake.
I saw it when it first came out, or it came to streaming, or I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it.
No, I didn't either.
And that's the only time I saw it. And that was, when did that came out? When did that come out?
Oh, good question.
2000, Maniac. 2012.
Okay, I would have said 2011. I was off.
Okay, so I was thinking 2011 as well.
Look at us.
It was like the text last night. What do you call the Marcy Playground cover band? Don't answer it, Patrick. Everybody knows the answer.
There's only one thing you can call it.
So Maniac remake, saw it back then in 2012. And I think that's when I was really starting to like I was a real horror douchebag back then. It's like, oh, challenge me.
Okay. You know,
show me the most. Ugh, ew, gross. I was one of those. I was a huge douchebag when it came to movies. And so I was like, yeah, this is edgy, man. Yeah, okay. This is edgy. And I haven't revisited it because I feel like I'd be like, oh, good job, guys. Look at you. You're being clever.
That was a little bit of my response. So, yeah, back so in like, 2012.
I just want to leave it in my head like, oh, yeah, it's an edgy. Yeah, great. Yeah. Yeah.
It is streaming on Tubi for anyone interested.
Yeah. The other one, get your opinion on this, which I think is generally liked, if not loved, by all, Behind the Mask, Leslie Vernon's story.
Yeah.
Is that told through his perspective?
I think it's told through the Sarah, what's her name, from Home Alone, the filmmakers, you know?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was thinking maybe his perspective via the interview.
Okay.
Right? But he's another character, I think, just because that's the way the movie is, you know, he's very charming. Leslie Vernon, very charming, right?
It is astounding to me that they never made a sequel to that movie.
Yeah, it's really
strange. Like a no-brainer. Like, they had a potential horror icon there at the ready and failed to capitalize on it. And who knows why, you know? Like, I think there were some comic book sequels. But, I mean, his name, the performance, the mask, everything was packaged together in this great way. For a whole run of movies they could have done, you know. I don't know that they would have been as kind of meta or clever as Behind the Mask, but it blows me away that they never sequelized that movie, which is fine. I mean, I like the movie plenty, and I don't necessarily need more, but it's just surprising in today's climate.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. Could have turned it into an IP, folks. Come on. Missed your opportunity.
Right.
Okay, the other one, maybe yes, maybe no. And we talked about this franchise last year sometime. Leatherface.
Yeah, we did.
Right? Is it the... Yeah. Not Texas Chainsaw 3, but like right. The actual Leatherface movie that came out in whenever that was.
I don't remember it super well. Again, that's another one that's kind of structured as a mystery, right? Because it has you guessing the whole movie, like, which one's going to be Leatherface?
That's true. Yeah,
good. It's not the one you think, pussy. I did not like that movie.
So. Be edgy. Let's be grimy and dirty.
What do you think changed? So you were talking about how you were like this movie douchebag or horror douchebag in the early 2010s. What changed?
I don't know. I think, when did you and I meet or first start podcasting together? Not too long ago.
No, it was a couple of years. Was Copland our first?
Copland was our first episode.
Okay. But so, we had corresponded prior to that because you were already writing for the site, but didn't I like write some weird interview for you one time?
Oh yeah. What the fuck was that for? That was for one of my early podcasts, a horror podcast.
Okay.
I was a douchebag back then. I think, honest to God, it was just a few years ago, like maybe the pandemic.
Really?
Yeah. For real.
I'm still trying to find the date on Copland. The search function on if this movie is garbage. Copland was 2020.
Okay. So just, you know, soon before that. I don't know. It's just because I came into my real movie obsession very late, you know, within the past 5 years, we'll say.
Okay.
All sorts of movies, you know, and back in 20 2010 or 2011, I had my first podcast, and you know, it was all horror, and I was like, oh God, I'm the horror guy. Nobody in Omaha, nobody in the country knows horror more than this guy.
I've seen the Maniac remake.
Right. You know, I am an authority on horror.
What was the name of this podcast?
Because it's still out there.
All right.
Nice try.
Did you use your real name, or did you go by like Dr. Blood?
I wasn't that big of a douchebag.
Those podcasts make me nuts. Every once in a while, I'll go looking for something that's like about Toby Hooper or something, and sure, I'll find, you know, like these three guys in the South, and they all go by like Captain Blood and Chainsaw Mike, and I'm just like, just be people. Yeah, you don't need to, you know, just be a person.
Right. And so it wasn't until, I don't know, you know, I started writing just on my own about movies, where I was like, oh, I don't know shit about movies. And then, you know, kind of humbled myself. And then it because of writing for F This Movie and then starting the Cult Movies podcast, that's where I was like, I just like movies, and I like mm-hmm. to write about them, and I want to learn some stuff, and that's mm-hmm. it. So that's all I want to do. I think putting in, oh, I guess it was probably, okay, so it's early, late 2019 is when I was talking to the Rebeller people about Neon Badges.
Right.
And it was around that time, because I started corresponding with them in December of 2019. And they're like, we'll pay you to do this. And I was like, oh, I should probably take this seriously then.
Yeah,
so
right.
it was around that. I mean, you know, within the past 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm grateful to everybody that I've met. I'm grateful to you, especially like giving me a chance to like grow and learn and allowing me to. But, you know, that's the great thing about movies. There's quite a few movies, Patrick. Did you know that?
Well, there's Maniac, and there's the remake of Maniac.
Right.
So I can think of two off the top of my head.
And that's all you need. And really, you just need the first one.
I'm just so much more interested in a person who just likes movies and wants to learn about movies through this process, through what we do, talking about them and writing about them, than I am in a person who's like, here's what I know.
Yeah.
And here, you know, like that, I know a lot of people that are the latter, and they just want to tell you what they know, and they're not interested in changing their minds or growing as viewers. It's like, this is the canon of what's good. I will not be swayed from that. And I'm so not interested in talking about movies that way.
No. And you know, I think that's like Maniac on the surface, like the poster, you know, Bill Lustig and Joe Spinell were pissed at first about the Maniac poster, because Joe's face was supposed to be on there. And this artist came back with like this dude with a giant penis sticking out of his jeans, holding a fucking scalp and a bloody knife. And like, you look at that, you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then you right. watch a trailer, you're like, whoa, this is super violent. But it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And then being able to sit down and just have a real conversation like you do every week on this show, and just talk, like be willing to sort of be honest with your feelings about movies, about how a movie affected you. Saying that you empathize with this monster and Maniac, you know, I can't believe you said that, Patrick.
Oh, I know, God. That was a weird thing that I kept going back to.
And I know, God, I said that so much. What the fuck? But yeah, I mean, gosh, I think that's the great thing about movie. And you know, if you, most people, like my wife is a great example, just, you know, watches usually, you know, well-known newer movies, and that is fine.
Sure.
She also doesn't want to have conversation. You know, she just wants to sit down and like escape
Right.
for 2 hours and
Right.
sometimes, you know, for 4 hours with newer movies, 5 hours and however long they get in two parts and three parts and whatever. But you know, there are some people that, you know, people that part of the F This Movie crew, people that I get to talk to on my podcast every week, where it's not just about, like, you know, we say, okay, here's the jumping off point, this is the movie we're going to start with, then where does it go? And you kind of be open with that. And that's what I had to learn. For me, it was just the movie. Like, let's talk about the violence. Let me tell you all the facts that I read off of IMDb and Wikipedia. This is how they made the movie. And instead, it's like, okay, here's the movie. How did it make you feel?
Right.
Or, you know, it's stuff like that. Like, those are my favorite types of podcasts to listen to, and my favorite type of podcast to do. It's just have conversations.
Right.
And so once I was honest with myself to be able to say, you know what, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, it kind of became fun.
Right.
For me.
Right.
Before, it was like, I have to challenge you, like get to my level. And I'm like trying to keep this made up crown on my head, trying to fight off all the haters. I didn't have any haters. Nobody was fucking listening to my podcast.
They and no will one else as soon is gonna as you tell us the name.
I'll tell you the name afterwards, all right. Patrick. All right.
Good.
No.
Good. Yeah, it's, you know, there's a certain type of film critic, and they still exist, but I think they were definitely the critics who were reviewing Maniac when it came out. And this isn't to question their knowledge or their love of cinema. But I think there was a certain attitude of like, I know what a movie is, and this is not a movie. This is just violence, pornography. And they just rejected it. And I'm so glad that we have evolved to a place where we can see past what's shocking about Maniac and see what else is going on in this movie and talk about it. And the reputation of horror as a genre has been sort of rescued over the last 40 years, and it can be taken seriously. And there are entire podcasts devoted to it. I don't know if you know this, but some podcasts, there's a really good one I'll tell you about later. It's called Dr. Blood's Crypt. I'm just glad that, you know, we're at a place where it's like, yes, Maniac is violent and shocking and grimy. It's also this really tragic, sad story about loneliness in the way that, like, Taxi Driver is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, like I said, those are the conversations that I want to have. And I think those are the conversations that the people who I love and respect, try not to say film Twitter, in that universe, like, those are the types of conversations they want to have. And those are the people, like, I'm most interested in talking with, because to go even further, like, and then you can develop a relationship with this person, and like have this friendship. I have this sort of growing friendship with these guys. One is in New York and one is in Connecticut. One is in Colorado. I've never met them in person, and I probably will never meet them in person, but like, we check in with each other now, like you and I check in on families, like, how's life, that sort of thing. And you get to that point, it's like, holy shit. First, it was just talking about movies, and then it was talking about, you know, deeper meanings of these movies. And now it's like, hey, we're friends. And I think that's a pretty cool thing that started with a movie about a dude scalping ladies. And now we're best friends and we do it together.
That's right.
Scalp ladies, that is. No. We talk about movies and
stuff. Yay, movies. We should probably wrap up because my battery's actually about to die.
Oh my. Okay.
Which doesn't usually happen, but we talked for a while about Maniac, which was a really cool conversation. thank you guys for listening. Thank you for participating in Junesploitation. There's lots more that the month has to offer, so make sure that you're checking in every day for the theme. You're posting about it on our website, fthismovie.com, or you're going to Twitter and hashtagging Junesploitation. Wherever you want to post about what you're watching, post about what you're watching, because I love to see, you know, what everybody's checking out, and that's where I get a lot of recommendations, is from what other people are seeing. I'm now going to watch Hit List because Anthony told me about Hit List, a movie I didn't know existed before this podcast, because there's not like a place I could go to see a director's filmography, right? There's not one spot to that compiles everything a person has made. Somebody should come up with that, is all I'm saying.
It's the Internet Film Data Bank.
IFDB. Got it. All right. I wrote IFDB. It down. This was awesome, Anthony. Thank you so much.
Tons of fun. Had a great time. Thanks, Patrick.
Scalp you later.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.